Welcome to the Last Rush Hour podcast. I'm your host, Fred Pilot, author of the recently published ebook, Last Rush Hour, The Decentralization of Knowledge Work in the 21st Century. If you've ever wondered that someday soon you would no longer need to waste time commuting to and from the office and the rush hour would become a thing of the past, the ebook and this podcast are for you. Today, with modern information and communications technology, knowledge work, analyzing data, reading reports, writing and producing presentations, planning and strategizing, and collaborating with colleagues and clients can be done anywhere with a reliable internet connection and whenever one can think, communicate, and be creative and productive. Knowledge workers and their organizations have begun migrating out of the commute and office space. People are increasingly working somewhere all of the time in home offices or in their communities. Some organizations have gone fully virtual, operating without the major expense of dedicated office space. Each podcast will feature a conversation with a notable individual influencing and driving this major shift in how we work in the 21st century information economy. Welcome to the Last Rush Hour podcast. This episode's guest is Laurent Delon. He is CEO of Pacific Workplaces and CloudVO. It's based in San Francisco. The company runs a network of office locations connected and supported via the cloud. Laurent, I had a chance to hear you talk in the summer of, I think it was 2014, last year actually, in San Jose, and you were talking about the sharing economy, which we're all familiar with companies like Airbnb and Uber, and your business, as I understood it from your presentation, is really part of that sharing economy, whereby now office space is becoming a shared service. And of course, it's always been shared in dedicated brick and mortar downtown buildings, where you know you might get a long term lease, but of course you're tied in for a long period of time. You're talking about in your business a whole different model where it's much more fluid and there's not as much of a long term commitment. Is that right?
Yes, Fred. Good morning. First, I want to thank you for inviting me in your podcast. And wow, that's a big subject that you're just raising, but a very interesting one. You're absolutely right. What we do is right in the center of the sharing economy. We've got players in our industry like WeWork that came from a status of a startup, bootstrap startup, to being valued at $10 to $15 billion with a last round of financing just within a four-year time frame. So why is that? Well, simply because it makes so much sense nowadays for small business, medium-sized business, large business, to contemplate this kind of shared office space infrastructure that businesses like ours offer, because nobody has any clue what's really going to happen to their need for hard infrastructure over the next 5, let alone 10 years. Secondly, what people in our business provide, it's not just access to a shared infrastructure, bringing the concept of a shared building down to share space within a building, but also access to an entire support community. So there is a brick and mortar dimension, but there is a soft dimension which is becoming very important to everyone. It's very important to the startup that, you know, maybe a cool developer that knows how to develop apps but does not know what to do with respect to incorporation of his business, does not know what to do with respect to networking and marketing. And we find that kind of support, that kind of support community in a shared space environment. Or it could be a large company that just need a small branch office in a location, not knowing whether the two people they need to start the branch office with will morph into a need for 5 people or a cancellation of the location because the needs fluctuate. So in short, we're talking about sharing the brick and mortar. We're also talking about sharing community support. We are also talking about sharing an expensive technology infrastructure, which has very significant long-term cost, you know, upfront cost, investment cost that are made available on a variable cost basis, on an on-demand basis to the users.
Well, this on-demand office space, office as a service, as you service market, I noticed in your material, this is dovetailing with another trend that's the topic of this podcast, and that is knowledge work being decentralized out of centralized downtown commuter offices, or it could be large suburban campuses. But the whole idea of having everybody go from one community to another distant community to do their work daily, going back and forth, and, you know, we have all this commuting and traffic congestion seems to be worsening. How do you see your service, office as a service, fitting into that trend?
Yeah, so there is two kinds of users that our spaces support. There is the professional worker that has social needs. You know, it's one thing to work from home, but working from home sucks. You know, there is a point where it's hard to concentrate. It's hard to just work alone without having access to people, the warmth of people, the serendipity of the conversation that one has by the coffee pot, and how people learn things that way. But our kind of space will provide that kind of community that serves a local need. And then there is the mobile need. There is the mobility of people that travel from of my own coffee needs. When I go to work every morning, I don't go to a Starbucks. I go to a local coffee shop that I'm very comfortable with. It's good coffee. I know the patrons. I know the people. Every time I show up to get my coffee, and then I'm on my, you know, it's I have a little bit of my community shot of the day just by saying hi and spending two words with a local firefighter that gets his coffee at the same time as I get, and I'm on my way to work. When I travel, I tend to avoid local coffee shops. I only go to Starbucks. Why do I go to Starbucks? Because the coffee works for me, because I know that I'm going to get in and out in 1.5 minutes, and I know that I'm going to get plenty of bandwidth. So there is that function of being able to go from place to place in an environment which is somewhat familiar, which our industry is also organizing itself to provide, to support mobility. And then I'm going to add a third dimension to that, a third kind of user, which is distributed workforce. So a distributed workforce may be a large company, so it's a Google, an eBay, or it could be a governmental entity that wants to empower their workforce to work remotely. But again, as I said earlier, working from home can be very difficult because of the baby, because of the dog, because of the lack of infrastructure, and because of the social needs to bump into people that are hardly fulfilled you work from home. And and that's another aspect that our industry provide by making one single point of contact available to large enterprise that have a distributed workforce, and arrange for them to have access to a large network of on-demand office space.
Well, this is a good point you raise about community and working at home. You're right. A lot of people don't have a suitable space in their homes to work. However, there seems to be a need for something that is more accessible than a distant far-off office, that you're basically going to use the same tools that you could use in your community, namely a computer, a phone, maybe a meeting room. You can provide all that right in the community. It seems what you're proposing or discussing is more of a distributed community, not the centralized community of the 20th century centralized commuter office. Is that right?
That is absolutely right, because nowadays we have technology tools that enable that connection. Now, I'm not saying that a conference call, a telephone call, a video conference is perfectly replacing the one-to-one interaction, no. But it is really what enables for people to stay in touch, social media, informal conversations via IM. We have so many tools available to us to really stay connected and work together efficiently and effectively. So, you know, it's I live in Silicon Valley and I have a background in technology with large technology companies like Hewlett Packard and Sun Microsystems. And there was a time in the 90s where the hot and sexy companies of the time, and certainly Sun Microsystems was one of them at the time, would take the approach that the best and brightest want to come to Silicon Valley, you know, if they are in the technology industry. Therefore, that's where we need to grow and have everybody under one roof. I think Microsoft in Redmond, Washington, has in the past also taken a little bit of that approach. And then right around the 90s, so before the mobile tools were widely available, some of the thought leader of the time, and I'm thinking about Scott McNeely, I'm thinking about Eric Schmidt now at Google, but at the time at Sun Microsystem, started to think along the line that not all the best and brightest want to go to, you know, live between Palo Alto and Berkeley. There are all sorts of reasons why some of the best and brightest people in the world wants to stay in Omaha, Nebraska, family reasons maybe, or in Pakistan, or in Africa. And right now, you see a lot of these large companies deploying approaches that enable remote work to have access to the type of labor that they want to attract in their companies. What that means for these people is also the need to find a place to work, a professional place to work where you have access to conference rooms, private offices, or an open co-working environment to fulfill different kind of needs. And that's what our industry provides around the world.
Well, we do seem to see this tension playing out between the need for community and colleagueship and the old idea that we all had to work under the same roof, which we really see playing out in Silicon Valley, and I discuss this in my book. It's being choked by traffic and very high housing costs. It just doesn't seem to be working as an integrated community where you have people who work there also live there. There's just a lot of in and out commuting. You know, and then there was a company that was Yahoo a couple of years ago said we got to have everybody in the building, basically under one roof. So we have this debate seem to be playing out over what is the role of community versus how do we use information and communications technology to be more efficient, which, you know, I really see it as the ultimate killer app, because one of the biggest problems we have now is time and distance in terms of getting together and getting our work done. We have this enormous time distance barrier that information communications technology can break down. And it seems like you're offering somewhat of a compromise there where you're saying, okay, we can provide you the community, but you can have it in your own residential community. Is that right?
Yes. And I think your observation that not all Silicon Valley companies are embracing that trend is also very accurate. But it is the sense of history. If you look at particularly the smaller startups, the very active companies, the vast majority of them embrace a distributed model from the get-go. So they grow that kind of culture, and then eventually they become a Box, a Dropbox, they become a Uber or an Airbnb type of companies. Not all of them will achieve that level of success, obviously, but this idea of working with a distributed workforce is rooted in their origin. And then you have other kinds of companies, such as Apple Computer, such as Yahoo that you mentioned, that are still having a dramatically opposed strategy where it's still everybody under the same roof. Apple is building this huge spaceship in Cupertino, and I forgot the exact number, but I think the plan is something like 10,000 people under the same roof. Yahoo Yahoo, certainly a couple of years ago, asked everybody to come back to the campus. I think in Yahoo's case, it's you know, Yahoo was going through a very difficult time period where they were losing so many of their software developers to the competition, to a point where people it was not cool to say that you worked for Yahoo. And I think it's very understandable that at least on a temporary basis, it made sense for them to regroup. It made sense for them to stop the bleeding and to try something different. Whether that's going to be a long-term policy, will just, you know, it remains to be seen. HP has had a little bit of the same reflex, which is, hey, wait a minute, you know, we're not the coolest company around anymore. Let's get back together. So is that a sort of a pointless reaction to a trend that is bigger than them? Is that a smart move to make? Is that a temporary move? I just don't know. But every time there is a disruption, a major disruption in the way people go about their lives, in this case, in how they relate to the workplace, it's not surprising to see people going in very different direction. But as I said earlier, the sense of history from my vantage point is clearly towards enabling distributed work, mobile work, and that doesn't mean you don't get together face-to-face. Of course, there is a tremendous value for doing that, but that also means that people can work very effectively remotely and use social media tools to help fulfill what you lose in the process from a community binding perspective.
Laurent, I'm thinking of your distributed work centers being in communities where you have a lot of workers for an organization. Like San Francisco has a lot of their residents actually work in Silicon Valley. Let's say in Sacramento, community like Rancho Cordova or Elk Grove, you've got a lot of those people that commute every day to downtown Sacramento to work for the state of California. And in D.C., another government example, you have a lot of people live out in suburban Virginia, like in Falls Church or places like that. And again, another horrible commuting traffic congestion scenario that plays out every workday there. It seems that your opportunity may be in these population areas outside on the edges of the metropolitan areas where a lot of people live, because that's where the housing market economics sends them, because that's where the housing's affordable.
You would think so, and I am a big believer that it's just a matter of time before that exactly happens. Anecdotally, I've come across, you know, we have 500 partners globally that are in that business, and I see a lot of experiments, including my own company, my own Pacific Workplaces company, with over 15 locations, co-working and business center locations. We have also ourselves, and I've seen many of my friends try that model, thinking that it made a lot of sense to go to a sleeping community. You mentioned Elk Grove is a very good example. There is very little office buildings in Elk Grove. It's a very large sleeping community, people commuting to downtown Sacramento. A lot of these experiments of shared office space in those sleeping community have not been extremely successful. There are many counterexamples. There are some that worked out very well. You know, I've been a bit puzzled sometimes as to why people don't change their habits. Why don't they want to stop to commute? I'm not entirely certain about the answer to that question, other than their sponsoring organizations, you know, the company they work for. You know, it just takes time to make a cultural change. It just takes time for them to understand the benefit. It just makes time for that to understand that people can very effectively be managed remotely. Conversely, not, you know, when we talked about co-working, when we talk about other forms of shared office space, there has been that perception that, oh, it's only for the large cities. cities like San Francisco or Berkeley or New York City, which is not the case. Some of the most successful players in my industry, you find them in medium-sized cities like Bakersfield, California, Reno. For some reason, the pure sleeping community, like experiment in Tracy, California, have not been very successful. We have had our own experiment in the pocket area of Sacramento, close to Elk Grove, with sort of breaking even. So we haven't seen that rush yet in the sleeping community to share office space, but. To me, it's also the sense of history, and it's just a matter of time before it really happens in a big way.
So we're just not at a tipping point yet, even though there's a sense that this is happening.
I think so. I think the tipping point is you could feel it, you could see it, and it's just about there. But it was. We're not there yet.
Well, I think you certainly have an interesting solution, because so much of this disruption debate, as I like to refer to it, where we have information and communications tech disrupting the centralized commuter office way of doing knowledge work, you're providing a transition, if you will, from working at home to working in the community right where people live, because so much of this debate seems to have been focused on working at home and whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
And that's the wrong debate. I think the point is working anywhere you are, whenever you need to work. People value the ability to go to the soccer game in the middle of the afternoon, and they compensate by doing email at night. They'll do email at night from home. So it's very efficient, both from an enterprise-sponsored perspective, from a productivity perspective, but also from a work-life balance to enable that type of flexibility, so such that people can work whenever they want to, in time, but also in space.
That's also a very hot topic. We're seeing quite a bit of discussion about life balance now, and that's somewhat of another adjustment issue as knowledge work gets decentralized and becomes anytime, any place, because people were used to drawing set time and distance boundaries on when they did their work, and now that's being broken down to a large extent by the maturation of information and communications technology.
You bet.
Well, I wanted to thank you for being on the podcast today. Our guest today was Laurent Delon. He is CEO of Pacific Workplaces and CloudVO, based in San Francisco. The company runs a network of office locations connected and supported via the cloud. Thank you for being on the podcast, Laurent.
Thank you, Fred.